Again. Today I want to talk to you about your tongue. I want you to think of it as like a trowel that brickies use to kind of slap down the mortar and put the bricks in. We're speaking about speaking to build. And I guess in our world it would be easy to think that words don't matter much. In a world of advertising, mass media, smartphones, words flood over us every day. One study estimated that the average woman speaks 20,000 words a day. The average man, 7,000 words, but they're good. Another study calculated that by the time a child is three, they have heard 3 million words. And I haven't even begun to factor in phone messages, newspapers, advertising, radio on the way to work, billboards, traffic signs. And you'd think that under that inflationary pressure, that words would have been devalued as a currency. But Jesus won't let us do that. Jesus said, "I tell you that on the day of judgment, people will have to account for every careless word they speak." Listen carefully. Every careless word. Not every mean word, not every nasty word, not every dirty word, not every suggestive word, every careless word will be held accountable for. Often I speak with a student at college who tells me about the damage that was done 5, 10, 20 years before by something their pastor or their father or their mother said to them. Little throwaway line often. One student was in tears over his exam anxiety and his fear of failure. It was crippling for him. And he explained to me that 10 years before, his minister had said to him, "You'll never be good at communicating things." Or the woman whose father said to her when she was pregnant with her first child, "You look like a beached whale," with a kind of affectionate smile on his face. But that quip shaped her body image for years and years after that. Or the young boy who overheard his mother say, "He will never amount to much, but we love him." And those words have become like tattoos on their chests, like a scar across their face. Wounds that won't heal. And the Bible will often warn us of the danger of careless speech. Proverbs in particular, rich place to go. "Do you see a man who's hasty in his words? There is more hope for a fool than him." Proverbs 29:20 or 18:7, "A fool's mouth is his ruin and his lips are a snare of his soul." Or 11:9, "With his mouth the godless man destroys his neighbor." Or 18:21, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue." Goes into the New Testament as well. In James, "The human tongue is a restless evil, full of deadly poison, like a rudder of a ship. It determines very often whether we make it to harbor or we run aground on the rocks in our relationships." I don't know much about sailing, but in Australia we know all about bushfires. Consider how large a forest a small fire ignites. And the tongue is a fire. The tongue, a world of unrighteousness, is placed among the parts of our bodies. It pollutes the whole body, sets the course of life on fire, and is set on fire by hell. The Bible, again and again, we know a careless cigarette butt or an unsupervised barbecue can create havoc in a place like Australia. And we need to understand that our tongues can wreak that kind of havoc in the context of a church. The Bible will regularly put the choice before us. Are you speaking to tear people down or are you speaking to build people up? And we're not just talking about to their face. Behind their back, are you speaking to tear people down? Now, I'm not going to focus on that side of things. I suspect you, like me, don't need a lot of help with the tearing down bit. So what we're going to focus on is the building up bit and the potential that we have in our tongues to build God's church. And again, we'll pick up a range of one another sayings that are related to what we do with our mouths or our tongues. Ephesians 4, verse 15, passage that was just read to us. We'll establish two principles for our speech, two overarching principles. Whenever we open our mouth, Speaking the truth in love, we will in all things grow up into him who is the head, that is Christ. So the first key to building God's church is that we speak the truth to each other. Now, at one level, that means conversations that are marked by honesty and candor. Most of us have learnt how to kind of be polite, but play it safe in conversations, even flattering other people, rather than genuinely opening ourselves up in conversation to other people to talk about the reality of our lives. Or in speaking about ourselves, we tend to project the person we would like to be or think that the other person wants us to be, rather than let them in on the reality. The gospel of Jesus' acceptance and forgiveness frees us to speak truthfully about ourselves and our struggles. More importantly, we need to speak the truth of the gospel to each other as well. We need to be willing to point each other to the gospel and show how it applies to a particular situation in our life. And for many of us, again, that does involve taking conversations to a kind of deeper, more awkward level. But we need to get past that and learn to speak to each other about Jesus and what he has done for us, to be reminding each other of God's goodness and trustworthiness, particularly when our confidence in God's goodness and trustworthiness is put to the test by the circumstances that we're facing. I certainly need people to get alongside of me and remind me of the truth of the gospel in the face of all that we're going through with Kim. I desperately need that. I know people aren't good at it. I go weeks at a time without anybody having a go. I know people care. I know thousands of people care about me in reality, surrounded by people who care for me deeply. But we're not good at this. We don't practice this very much. We avoid this. But particularly when people are doing it tough, and we'll talk more about this in the next talk, we need to be able to get alongside each other and speak the truth of the gospel to each other. But at the same time, it needs to go hand in hand with love. Honesty and theological truth are never excuses for not speaking out of love to another person. It's not about me and the impression I make by my theological clarity or my boldness in the face of another person's obstinacy and stubbornness. It's not that I walk around burdened by this truth that I must share, and that if I don't unburden regularly, it all builds up, and like a teenage boy, you know, that's my excuse. It's about benefiting the other person. So therefore, however true the thing is that I want to say, I have to think about doing it lovingly. Proverbs is littered with advice about how to speak the right word at the right time. Proverbs 25:11, like apples of gold in settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances. You know that old saying, what's the most important thing about comedy? Timing. What's the most important thing about comedy? Timing. What's the most important thing about speaking lovingly to each other, albeit truthfully? So often it comes down to timing. And the respect that we show as we speak and the evidence of our love for the person as we do that. Ephesians 4:29, a little bit later in our passage, we'll skip over Ephesians 4:25, reinforces the importance of speaking truthfully to each other. Since you put away lying, speak the truth, each one to his neighbor, because we are members of one another. And then in verse 29, it kind of develops the love theme. Verse 29, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Some of us are very interesting to talk to. Some of us have got really good stories that we can tell. Some of us have no trouble keeping a conversation. We're good company. But it's quite another thing to really think through, is the conversation that I'm having and the way that I'm speaking to this person likely to build them up and strengthen their faith in Jesus? All right, it's a dimension of the kind of communication that's going on that, you know, as Christians we need to take seriously. The Bible's calling us to do that, to really give thought to the likely outcome of our conversation at this time. Now, that doesn't mean we can't relax, enjoy each other, have fun, share jokes. It's not ruling that out at all, but there will be times when doing that is actually damaging and destructive, or at least a wasted opportunity, where, you know, our small talk, our politics talk, our football talk, our weather talk is really a substitute for having the conversation we need to have or ought to have, the opportunity that we have to really make a difference in the person's life. In fellowship with each other, there is a chance to learn a new language, a new dialect of speech that's calculated to encourage and strengthen. I'm not talking about really contrived, sanctimonious, kind of trying to say the spiritual thing all the time, but a genuine concern for the other person and a genuine filter over the way that I'm speaking, so that I'm trying to speak in a way that's encouraging. Ephesians 5:19 will talk about the way that we speak to each other. It talks about communicating through song. Speak to one another with psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. When we sing together, we get to speak the truth to each other. Similar principles apply as we saw earlier. You really want to be singing songs that are true. You want to be singing songs with truth content, not just something that runs along really nicely to a catchy tune and you kind of sing it, and the more you think about it, you know, we had a college camp not long ago. Kim and I came away with one particular song going, what was that about? Now, the tune was like, you know, a little earworm going around and around in my head. Drove Kim crazy because we'd done this in-depth analysis driving home from the camp about how kind of fatuous the song was. And then I was humming the tune for the next week and Kim was just going, aah, aah. That's when she goes, look, I haven't got long to live. Will you shut up? She does play the cancer card. There was a time I said, look, you know, I got some work to do. Can you tidy up the kitchen? And she went, I've got cancer. So, you know, don't feel too sorry for her. That's all I'm telling you. My life's pretty difficult too. Anyway, with music, it's really important that the music matches the words at the same time. There's songs that we sing that are like sermons that have been put to some tune that's unsingable. We have to give careful thought. It's not just the musicians that should be giving careful thought to the songs we sing, but certainly, and you are well served by your musicians, when you are singing, you need to understand this dimension to what you're doing. You are teaching one another as you sing. So sing with gusto, sing to encourage, sing to really remind each other of the truth. Make it a kind of public witness to public confession of the truth that's being expressed in your song. But there's a sense in which we're all responsible to be teaching each other in these kinds of ways, looking for opportunities to remind each other of the truth. In Colossians 3:16, Paul will add another element. He calls on us to teach one another and admonish one another with all wisdom. We are involved in teaching, whether you're male or female, whether you're young or old, whether you're new or been here since time began, which is, what, 6 years ago for you people? You know, there's a role for you in teaching the people around you. And there's also a role in admonishing each other. I remember being on a camp, a camp like this. I was speaking, it was a bunch of students, and the girl who was leading the singing came to me and said, oh, do you want some songs? I said, oh, yeah, just a couple so they can get some air in their lungs before I speak. I was pretty typical of my ilk. I thought I was the star of the show. The most important thing that could possibly happen was what I had to say. And she rebuked me. I still remember it. She took me aside and she said, get behind me, Satan. No, she didn't quite. But she said, what sort of attitude to singing, you know, does that reflect? Are you kidding? And she took me to either Ephesians or to Colossians. And I kind of had to admit that she was absolutely right, that she'd nailed me, and I'd slipped into this awful kind of pompous arrogance about me as the speaker, where I was the center of everything. And I remember how much I appreciated that she'd done that. I think of other situations where people have admonished me, where they've taken me aside and they've pointed out that something I did was careless or something that I did was stupid. And I'm really glad that they saved me from being like that again. I don't want to be a goose. And when people come into me and go, you were a goose, and I get the opportunity to see that clearly and then avoid goosiness the next time, I'm really, really grateful. And I look back on certain relationships in the way, you know, in the context of a weekend like this, someone took me aside and said, look, what you said was pretty unhelpful. And out of that, you know, their willingness to come and have that very difficult conversation with the speaker, it was something that kind of initially took me by surprise. All of my defensive hackles were kind of raised. But once they'd had the conversation, I realized that they loved me enough to try to help me not to be a goose. And we have to be prepared to have those conversations with people. Sometimes we have to be prepared to have those conversations with people for the sake of another person. Recent situation I had to deal with at college, there was a guy who was kind of harassing. It wasn't super serious. It may have been criminal. No, it wasn't criminal. But he somehow obtained her address. And with her in the room, he would speak loudly about how he went for a drive in the area that she lived in. It was a hopeless, desperate attempt to get attention. But the girl felt harried by it and was upset about it and came and spoke to me about that. And I had to take him aside and I had to sit down and go, that's not okay. That's not acceptable. It wasn't a conversation I really wanted to have, but I recognized that I needed to do that on behalf of the girl. I could see how hopeless it was to say to her, have you spoken to him about that yet? Would just be feeding the problem. It would have got him the attention that he wanted. Whereas, you know, a friendly visit from the principal was a very different experience. It didn't result in the date that he was hoping for. Yes, but you know, there's times when you just have to have those conversations. And as a church, we have to be prepared to have those conversations. We have to be prepared to have those conversations with our leaders, because there will be times when they slip up and make a mistake. There'll be times when you need to have it with your members of your Bible study group. It may be that you hear a husband speaking about his wife in a really offhanded way to a group of other men, speaks of his wife in an unworthy way. You don't want a church culture that's characterized by that kind of speech. So you just take him aside, you do it in love, you draw him aside, and you go, look, I think you've got to be really careful about that. I don't think you were honoring your wife when you did that. And you're not condemning them. You're not threatening them with expulsion. You're going, you can do better. We can all do better. And as a church, we've got to do better than behaving like that and talking like that. And there's a thousand situations that will come up in church where someone being taken aside and being spoken to gently and lovingly can prevent a much bigger problem occurring and a wider culture developing. It can stop the leaven in its tracks so that it doesn't leaven and spread through the lump. And it takes a vigilance, but don't leave it to your leaders. The leaders will tend to be good at mopping up the big issues, because by the time they come up to their attention, they've had to rise through the kind of thresholds of people being concerned. Because if you're there on the spot and you see a Christian brother or sister behaving in a way that's not worthy, and you can draw them aside and just go, look, that's not okay, you can really do enormous good. Like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold is a wise reprover to a listening ear. A rebuke goes deeper into one who is understanding than 100 blows into a fool. There's scope for us to be encouraging each other. 1 Thessalonians 4:18 and 5:11 will repeat the phrase, therefore encourage one another with these words. Or in 5:11, therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact that you're doing. Paul's talking into a context where these Christians have lost someone that they loved. People from their congregation had died. There were apparently some people who were expecting Jesus to return prior to that, and they were worried about their friends missing out. And Paul is saying, you need to get alongside each other. There's this mutual opportunity, responsibility, to be speaking words of encouragement. The words that he gives them to say are basically, we know that Jesus died and rose again. We know that those who die in the Lord before he returns won't miss out. He'll raise them up and they'll meet him, just as we, if we survive, will meet him in the air as well. He reminds them of the gospel and Jesus' triumph over his death. And he says, in the face of death and the grief of death, we need to be good at speaking the truth of the gospel and its implications for death. I remember being at a funeral a very, very long time ago. Death of a young mother of meningococcal. So she got sick one night and was dead the next day and left behind three small children. And I can remember, I vividly remember the minister standing up and speaking to us as a congregation and going, it's up to us to ensure that these children know where their mother is and how safe she is in the care of Jesus. They're too young now to register. We'll need to be vigilant about this in the years ahead, but it's a congregational responsibility for us to ensure that these children have explained to them who their mummy was, what their mummy was like, and that because of her trust in Jesus, she is safe in his care. A very powerful thing to be saying to us, but he laid it on us as a congregational responsibility. Hebrews 10, 24, 25. Again, with the return of Jesus in mind, he says, let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. There's a whole other dimension to our talking with each other and to each other. We need to spur one another on, like a jockey goading a horse to kind of run the race and get to the finish line. The nature of our fellowship, one of the reasons God has brought us together, is to spur each other on to live consistently and faithfully as God's people in the lead up to Jesus' return. I can't imagine how hard it is to be a lawyer. I'm up to 19 female lawyers now. I had a few more conversations this morning. The number is mounting. I can't imagine what it's like to work in that kind of environment. I'm sure there must be times when you're put into situations, really difficult situations, just you're working often in a workplace that largely non-Christian will operate at times by non-Christian values. You may be put in situations where you've got really difficult ethical situations to negotiate as a Christian. I don't know. I certainly cannot imagine what it would like to be a doctor in a hospital with the increasing pressure to perform abortions and the rest of it. For a Christian to find themselves in that kind of workplace, we need to be spurring each other on. Sometimes it'll involve really, difficult conversations with each other about what will it look like to live Christianly in that particular situation. But we need to be spurring each other on the opportunities where we do gather. We need to be kind of getting alongside each other and helping each other along to live for Christ counterculturally in the world in which we're then scattered during the week. But that's a crucial part of church. It's not a social gathering. It's where we're equipping each other to live for Christ in a world that hates Christ. And for some of us, that will bring really difficult pressures at different times. And the writer to the Hebrews says, make sure you understand the opportunities you have to spur each other on to run that race in the face of all those difficulties and learn to be consistently, faithfully Christian in often really difficult circumstances. At every church I've belonged to, just about, there have been rosters. I don't know if you have rosters, but rosters are, on the whole, a necessity to get the jobs done and share the load. At one church I went to, they'd pass around a piece of paper at a certain time each year, and it had on the heading, Opportunities to Serve. Now, I hope you can see, just with this early part of talking about things, that those rostered duties are just the tip of the iceberg of the opportunities God gives to each one of us. I wonder sometimes in the churches that I belong to whether people have thought that that's a full and comprehensive list of the opportunities to serve. Greeting at church, doing the Bible reading, serving supper afterwards, and that's kind of, beyond that, there's not much else to do in order to serve. But what Paul is saying is, There's so much more. There are so many opportunities. And it's this nitty-gritty conversations with each other, in, around, at, under, over, church, that make all the difference in building the sinews and fibers and muscles of a church body. Someone's making sure that morning tea is provided so that you're free to talk, so that you can have the kinds of conversations that only you can have with the person that you're talking to, given that you've been put together. Or maybe you underestimate what you can do to build people around you because you're not in a position of leadership. You don't regard yourself as a person of influence. Understand the power of your tongue to do good and to build God's church. Lots and lots of opportunities. A timely, loving word of truth spoken at the right time in someone's life might relieve them of a burden or a load that you can't even imagine at the time the conversation starts. Understand that power. Pray to God that He'll allow you to use that power. Turn up at church earlier so you're more likely to have those kind of conversations, or start a conversation that you might continue after church. But whatever it is, understand the power of your tongue. And as you do it in accord with the way that Christ would do it and the way that Christ has loved you. You have these priceless opportunities to be like Christ to your brothers and sisters. We all have the scars, the tattoos of the cutting words that have been directed at us, and we have the opportunity instead to speak, to build each other up. Romans 15, 2-3 says this: "We should all please our neighbours for their good, to build them up. For even Christ did not please himself, but as it is written, 'The insults of those who insult you have fallen on me.'" Jesus had just one life to live, and it was a relatively short one. What did he do with it? He didn't live to please himself. He invested that one life in building up people around him. Think of how the words he spoke comfort and encourage and edify you today. Go to the Gospel of John. Go to any of the Gospels. Read the words of Jesus, the promises that he makes. "If anyone comes to me, there is no way that I'll turn them away." The categorical promises of eternal life to anyone who puts their trust in Jesus. I can assure you, in the circumstances that Kim and I are going to, those words are precious. Jesus spoke them so that we might have hope and have life and have a relationship with him. And he shows us the power and wonder of truthful, loving words. May God strengthen all of us to live the same life of service and put our tongues to the same use of building up our brothers and sisters. Let's pray.